translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Thereafter, to save the people from the danger of an unregulated government, the sages turned Maharaj Nimi's material body, from which, as a result, a son was born, purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Arajaka Bhayam, if the government is unsteady and unregulated, there is danger of fear for the people. At the present moment, this danger always exists because of government by the people. Here we can see that the great sages got a son from Nimi's material body to guide the citizens properly. For such guidance is the duty of a Kshatriya king. A Kshatriya is one who saves the citizens from being injured. In the so-called people's government, there is no trained Kshatriya king. As soon as someone strong accumulates votes, he becomes the minister or president. Without training from the learned Brahmins, expert in the Shastras. Indeed, we see that in some countries the government changes from party to party, and therefore the men in charge of the government are more eager to protect their position than to see that the citizens are happy. The Vedic civilization prefers monarchy. People liked the government of Lord Ramachandra, the government of Maharaj Yudhisthira, and the government of Maharaj Parikshit, Maharaj Ambarish and Maharaj Prahlad. There are many instances of excellent government under a monarch. Gradually, the democratic government is becoming unfit for the needs of the people, and therefore some parties are trying to elect a dictator. A dictatorship is the same as a monarchy, but without a trained leader. Actually, people will be happy when a trained leader, whether a monarch or dictator, takes control of the government and rules the people according to the standard regulations of the authorized scriptures. Omegina Telamandasha Ganangana Salaikaya Shakshashul Militam Yina Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Mastaya Bhutale Shimadi Shiva Rama Swami Chidamani. So this dynasty of Maharaj Nimi, we understand Nimi was counter-cursing with his spiritual master, Vasishtha Muni, and he was killed in the process, and he was a king, so he had a kingdom there to take care of, but he was also very self-realized and detached. So his choice was to, he didn't want to come back in a material body, so he was realized of the temporary nature of the body, so he wanted to be with Krishna ultimately. But from his body, they did a churning process where they preserved his body in special liquids and different, like Ayurvedic, it's very scientific. And so when they churned his body, from his body came Maharaj Janaka Maharaj. And Janaka means one who is born unusually. He's born from the churning of the body of King Nimi. So the main point is the an unregulated government. There's a bit of a problem because there's no one on the throne, and it's down to the heads of society, not just the Kshatriya kings, but above them are the Brahmins, the sages that direct the king. This is how it should be coordinated. So this is. So I was thinking of another time this happened when King Vayner was in ruling rulership, and King Vayner was, as we understand, he was one of the most worst kings in the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, the most demoniac. He was worse than even Kamsa and Shishupal, because he didn't even think of Krishna. He was very very atheistic, and even from a young age he was actually playing games with his friends, and he would have bow and arrow, but he would use real arrows and shoot his friends dead, and kill his, which wasn't very good at all. And obviously the father could see the king. What was King Vayner's father? It wasn't Uttama. It was something else. Anyway, so he was he was already a bad example, but eventually, because he was the king, they say, you know, even if it's a bad king, or even a blind king like Dhritarashtra, is better than no king. Because this is the point, they needed a king. But at one point, he became so demoniac that he took away the Brahmins' sacrificial paraphernalia and started causing disruption in the sacrificial arenas and condemning the worship of Vishnu. And in the end, the Brahmins actually came together and they cursed him, and he also dropped down dead. They say his body was in pieces. They chanted that mantra, hum, or something, with a H, quite a powerful mantra. And then, whilst he was there, you know, obviously left his body, King Vayner, they needed someone to take care of the kingdom, so they actually churned his body as well. They churned up his body, and after so much churning, many things was going on. But then at some certain point, from his chest, I think, came Prithu Maharaj, the Krishna's ruling incarnation, and his wife Archie. And the main thing was to implement rulership, because, you know, like even with Dhritarashtra, he was temporarily on the throne. Originally, it was King Pandu who was on the throne, and then he died untimely. And because Dhritarashtra is the elder brother, he should have got the throne originally, but because he's blind, it wasn't so good for a king, a leader, to be blind. But in emergency situations, because Pandu left his body, Dhritarashtra had to hold the throne for Yudhisthira Maharaj, which that didn't happen until there was a great war because of selfish motives. But this is a very important point, because when the king is not there, and it says in here about a monarchy, you know, and it's quite good in England, we've got a monarchy, and not that we're all patriotic, but, you know, there's some order, there's some good order there, even looking back at the, you know, in the Falklands conflict quite a while ago, 30 years ago, but one of our princes actually did go out on a helicopter. He was a helicopter pilot flying out there into some quite dangerous areas in the battle zones. So this was some slight resemblance of ancient, what do you call it, the monarchy and the Kshatriyas to lead in battle in some way. But there needs order originally, because the thieves and the rogues, you know, and all the unsavory low class will rise up, and they'll terrorize and exploit the general populace. And so there has to be a proper system. And our system, as we understand, is Varnashram Dharma, which is still a process to be implemented. It's more difficult than it sounds, but with determination and Krishna consciousness, it can be done. And that's at the bottom of the Krishna conscious scale of Varnashram Dharma. It's starting from the bare process of to become God conscious. So the is like in Vedic culture. I was just examining the changeover of this is a serious situation when the king isn't there, and there is an empty throne, and things can happen. Not good. The Brahmins will implement a new leader somehow or other, and then that's why we need this higher source connected to the Supreme Lord where they can implement that. I was thinking also in a comparison, sometimes it invaded culture because it's like you do things properly in the proper way. Everything's regulated. It's like if someone, like in India, if you die in the night, you should be cremated by sunset before the sun rises. And if you die in the day, you should be cremated before dusk, before the sun goes down. This is the proper process. Like, you know, everything's done regularly. Here, obviously, if someone dies, even if we're going for a cremation, we're left in the box for a little while and maybe 12 days even. Meaning, you know, that sometimes that's a dangerous thing for one who's attached to the body. That's the reason we have the Vedic process and the cremation process. Connecting the cremation process just to how serious it is to be done within a certain time, like when a king leaves the throne and another king should take his place. Meaning that, you know, the body is very, we're so attached to the body, that's why we have this process of cremation, because then the soul can carry on to its next destination. So, everything's run perfectly as we see. It's systematic and mode of goodness, you know, it's that's what we're trying to ultimately visuddhisattva, beyond the mode of goodness, but we need to implement the mode of goodness and regulation and duty. This is what refines our character and consciousness to go into spiritual life more easily. In this society, in today's society, it talks a little bit about the people, for such. Let me see. Because the government by the people, I was just trying to work out what that means. Here we can see that. Always exists. At the present moment, this danger always exists because of government by the people. So people are voting in because they haven't got spiritual knowledge, or that they're voting in leaders or anyone just for their quick sense gratification, just to give them some kind of temporary happiness. And then after some time, these leaders, they don't really satisfy their needs, then they vote them out. And they're not real leaders. They're just, in Kali Yuga, everything's upside down, we understand. It's topsy-turvy. You've got the high people are actually, with any intelligence, they're not at the top, they're at the bottom. And the low class people, they're attached to selfish motives, they're at the top. And so it's all topsy-turvy. So society is not aware. A nice devotee gave an example. This is the day and age where, what is it, where the dog comes into the house, it comes in, maybe comes into the bedroom, and it jumps up on the bed to eat the remnants of a cow on the leftovers of a dinner plate. Meaning, you know, there's no idea of protection to animals or the mode of goodness or cleanliness. And so the people need to be led by great teachers. And this is, back to Vinod Thakur, I think he predicts that, you know, there is going to be a time within this golden age that, you know, the high court judges are there and they have tilak, and also the leaders of countries become Vaishnavs. They're on a bodily concept of life, the general populace, that they so they need to be by example. This is why it's nice to go out and preach or share our Krishna consciousness through chanting, when we say preach, or preach by example. This is the main we're training up here. We're like in an army, in a way. We're keeping ourselves. We're doing our training, we're rising early and chanting and doing our service. This is keeping us effective for taking on the material energy a little bit, where we can step into the battlefield of preaching and go and pass out some books. Dare I talk about it? I haven't been out for ages. But also maybe a Harinam, you know, it's nice to get out on a Harinam and also prasadam distribution and also whatever we can do, obviously. Being at the temple, we help out from that way in our service and support the mission. and this is our great fortune. So the general populace, they don't have no knowledge. This is why we've got to pass on this knowledge. It's knowledge we're passing on, spiritual knowledge. They're like Prabhupada gives the example of the bird in the cage. The bird is not being fed. You know, the cage is being polished and he's cleaning the cage, the person, but he's not feeding the bird and the bird dies. So they're getting all the sense gratification. It's just burning everyone out. But the knowledge of the soul and relationship with Krishna is that which gives one life ultimately. So our good fortune is we can pass this on to others. One nice spiritual master was explaining that actually our reward is our service. You know, sometimes we think service is difficult or burdening, but in the long term, it's actually our reward, and we should try to do it as best as we can. You know. And please the Lord. These leaders, they're not trained. They don't have real knowledge of scripture or surrender to the Supreme Lord. So their motives are very selfish, and they're like the blind leading the blind. Prabhupada explains when the blind man leads another blind man, and they don't know what they're doing, and they just fall into a ditch. And the cheated and the cheaters, or the cheaters and the cheated. But I was thinking we are trying to cheat Krishna, but because we turn away from him, and he's never cheated us. Krishna actually wants us to come back more than we want to come back ourselves, and we're the ones that are actually committing the adultery, or whatever you want to call it, turning away from Krishna, trying to enjoy his energy. This is why we need good leadership, of course, and to also to become serious in our Krishna consciousness, to follow the spiritual master and the guidance of association devotees. Srila Prabhupada explains in Kali Yuga, this is not surprising what's going on, because it's a headless society. It's a society without Brahmins or Kshatriyas, and so it's just like a body with just no arms and no head. It's just like a belly and legs walking around. You know, so it doesn't know what it's doing. And then unfortunately, there's so much due to untrained leadership. They're not real warriors, these leaders. They also end up... They end up having wars over no real good reasons. Not like the Battle of Kurukshetra. That was for a proper reason. That was all done in a perfect way of through scriptural revelation. The rules of diplomacy were broken, and there was a reason for on the principles of upholding virtue and saving the future of the human race. But these wars now, they just fight each other over anything. Prabhupada explains it's like in Kali Yuga, it's like in a bamboo forest. There's no fire there, but when it's all dry, the bamboo is flowing in the wind, and it just touches each other, and the fire breaks out, and there's a cohesion of bamboo, and it just, this fire erupts, and there's like war and over egos and leaderships. But not for religious principles, a higher duty, because a Kshatriya is not just one who has prowess on the battlefield or knows how to do martial arts or anything or the art of the bow. He also has to be selfless, as I understand. These are one of the main qualities of a Kshatriya. He has to be, they like to gamble maybe and do certain things, but they won't gamble anyone else's stuff. They'll only gamble their own, what belongs to them. But when it comes to involving citizens and their people that rely on them, they have to be there at that every last moment. Even if an animal in the kingdom, even if a pigeon is not looked after, you know, probably like King, was it King Nimi or Sibi? Ranty, I think it was King's, maybe even Sibby or something, wasn't it? There was a pigeon and a hawk was flying, and the hawk was King Indra, and the pigeon was in disguise as was actually Agni, the fire god, and he was getting chased. So King Sibby, he protected the pigeon. And he said, no, you can't harm him to the hawk. You know, I've got to protect him. He's in my kingdom. But the hawk said, how am I going to, you know, eat then? You know, you've got to protect me as well. I'm here. He said, okay, I'll feed you. And he said he was going to cut skin from his body to the scales, because he sat on a scale, this hawk. And he said, if you can, no, to put the pigeon on the scale and put as much flesh on there as weighs the same as the pigeon. So this King Sibby, he did. He tried to put some of his flesh on there, and it still didn't weigh out, so the pigeon was still too heavy. In the end, he sat himself on the scales to give his whole self, just for the pigeon. And then the Lord Indra and Agni revealed their form, and they gave him benedictions, because he was actually a selfless king. We're looking at Prabhupada when he was younger. He said, you know, in connection with these wars that go on, and this bodily concept of life, when there's lots of fighting over, you know, territory and everything. He said that when there was the Calcutta riots, when he was younger, he said, and he was a very young boy, I think it was, he had to stay indoors because it was so much commotion going on and dangerous out on the street. That the Hindus and the Muslims were fighting. And he said afterwards, when everything cleared, he went out. And the day it all ended, and he went out there, and he said he saw everything was all over the place. And he said, there's lots of bodies. They're bodies. And he said, one place there was piled up bodies. And he said, there was Hindus and Muslims in the pile. And he said, and he sort of writes, in one of the purports, I think, he said, now they're not fighting for territory. They're all laying together on the bodily concept of life. Because they didn't understand, you know, that they're actually eternal, and they're just over this. They end up uniting at some point on the bodily concept. Before they were fighting, now they're all together. But so a Kshatriya, a king, he should know, he has this knowledge of surrendering to Krishna, and understanding that he's not the body, he's a spirit soul, and his constitutional position is an eternal servant of the Lord. And his duty is to protect and also bring others to God consciousness through his example. So he's taking this, should be taking direct instruction from the guru, the spiritual master. This is the whole process. It's Arunta. It's coming down. This knowledge is coming down through parampara. So the same in the line of the monarchy. They should... So the kings, they need... You know, in this world, society needs the great leaders, and there was those great exemplary leaders like Lord Ramachandra. We've just been reading about Lord Ramachandra, and he's like virtue personified, the Supreme Lord. And in Bhagavad Gita, explains whatever action a great man performs, common men follow. In whatever standard he sets by his exemplary acts, the whole world pursues. So we got those examples there, and these kings. Or should be obviously they're trained, or even dictators. Prabhupada says, you know, I think Prabhupada, when he says in the purport about dictators, we're in a desperate situation in Kali Yuga. But even if a dictator is trained, he can also take leadership. But they should be there to implement the Vedic process, you know, of the Varnashram, and to protect the Brahmins at the top, the Brahmins, the cows. The children, women, and old people. Obviously, to protect the Brahmins first, because they're the head of society, and they're teachers to teach the populace, and ultimately to teach the kings how to worship the Supreme Lord and properly administrate in a God-conscious way. And also, they're actually surrendered to the Supreme, And the Brahmins wouldn't take a wage, as we remember. The Brahmins shouldn't be paid originally, the guru or the teachers of the kings. They were relying on alms door to door or donations from their teaching in some way. And so at the same time, they couldn't be bribed by the king because the king might have so much opulence in his treasury. He might try to bribe the Jai Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Sitaram Ashram Hanuman Shivani Taya Kijai. Try to bribe the Brahmins. So the Brahmins would be detached from material opulence so they could give direct direct instruction without feeling that they giving the truth, their truthfulness. That's one of the main characteristics of a Brahmin, is to speak the truth. And then there's the cows. The cows need to be protected because they're giving the milk. Milk, Prabhupada explains, from the cow is when we drink the milk, it gives us the capacity it gives the finer tissues to the brain to understand the philosophy of spiritual life. And also that the cows provide all the paraphernalia for Vishnu Yajna, you know, all the ghee and dung and mudra and everything. So they need to be protected. Children need to be protected because the children of today could be like leaders and obviously the society of tomorrow. So they need to also be well educated. So that's their protection. And women also need to be protected from, obviously, when they're young, from by the father, in the middle age by the husband, and when they're older by their children. And then old men need protection as well, old people, old men. This is by the Kshatriyas, the main five that should be protected. Old men, because their preparation at the later stages of life, they should be preparing to go back home, back to Godhead, or at least a higher destination. And they need to be in a safe environment, you know. And I was thinking, in this age, the so-called kings and leaders, they actually don't go to the battlefield. They when there's a battle on, they'll retreat. They'll go underground in their bunkers, even 2 miles underground, with all their safe in their safe houses, and they'll go onto their laptops or whatever, and they'll have the connections to the battlefield there and try and administrate from that place. But they've got no real prowess, and they'll send the soldiers in, and the soldiers of today, the so-called Kshatriyas, they're all like university students, went to the army, or factory workers, or they're not properly trained, born and bred, as they say. So then they go on the battlefield and they don't know what the hell's going on when it really starts happening, as they say. The kings and the army should be very brave. Pandavas, like the Pandavas, is a good example, of course. 5,000 years ago, it's a lot different then. Prabhupada talks about in Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 2, text 31 in the purport, he explains, even recently, the Jayapur, in Jayapur, the kings would, that came into power, they would have to do a test. They would have to go up to the forest with their sword and find in the jungle and find the tiger and fight with the tiger, and if they come back alive, that's good, and if not, it didn't quite happen. But when if they kill the tiger, he has a very opulent cremation, because it's actually a religious process, a Vedic process. I'm just associating this to one of the qualities of the Kshatriyas, the leaders, which would be prowess on the battlefield. They also quite diplomacy also is one of the tools of the Kshatriya diplomacy. But their main goal is virtue, is always to uphold virtue. As soon as they come off away from virtue of ultimately religious principle, then they're in trouble. And so this is very important. Also, in ancient times, when they would have to have these battles, they would be very concerned about the general populace. They, like in Kurukshetra, it was taken right out of right out the way of the villages and all the population. They took it miles away onto a field. And, you know, but now they don't really, no one cares. If there's something going on in the wrong place, even the leaders in America, they'll send their soldiers straight in. And if women and children and old people are all, if they're in the way, they're going to get it, you know. There's no concern. So you know, this is not really going to have any good results. And it's going down quick, as they say, Kali Yuga's. It's going downhill quite fast in that sense. These kings, they would also be able to make judgments. You know, they'd have Rajarishis. We're looking, say the Rajarishi, he has power and opulence, but he also, as a Rishi, he would have spiritual knowledge and be realized in service to the Lord. And Prabhupada explains it's better to be more Rishi than Raja, because when the time really comes, you need to be more of a Rishi than a Raj. Because, you know, you've got to make those dharmic decisions for the higher cause. And these days, there's a lot of democracy and groups around the even monarchy that influence them. Prabhupada calls it demon crazy. And as we've heard, and in the Bible, it's quite an interesting story, being able to make judgments on the spot. You know, these kings are quite quick. And that was a good example with, I think, with King Solomon. King Solomon had to make a quick judgment once, and they didn't have to call in any forensic experts or to do any tests or medical scientists, because there was two ladies. Do you remember they had the baby, and they were fighting over the baby, and they said, you know, I'm the mother. No, I'm the mother. They were saying they were the mother. Both of them were the mother, and they were pulling, but one was letting the other pull. Then King Solomon said, I'll solve this, no problem. He said, what I'll do, I'll chop the baby in half. You can have half each. And one lady agreed, and the other one said, no, take the baby. So instantly he found out who the real mother was through that decision. So you know, they'd have a bit of intelligence was there, which was important, you know. And like when Yudhisthira was running the kingdom, I understand, and like Parikshit Maharaj, they would have, they were so concerned about the citizens, the well-being of the citizens. In the courtyard, they used to have this big drum. And somewhere it's written, I can't remember what purport Prabhupada talks about it, I think in the first canto. But if there's any problems, someone would come and bang on the drum, and the king, it'd have to be something very important, and the king would come and say, well, how can I help you? What do you need? I think there was just one case where someone came. I can't remember the story, but actually it never got banged whilst Yudhisthira and Parikshit Maharaj were the kings, you know, these great examples. And whilst they were Yudhisthira was on the throne and looking after everyone, it only rained at night. You know, there wasn't no rain in the day or grey skies, you know. And all the minerals and were in the oceans and in the rivers, and the seasons were all calibrated in perfect order. So we can see that these the examples and the results of what happens when you, and even when, and also explains when Yudhisthira was running the kingdom, the cows were so happy that their milk bags were so full. When they were walking along, the milk was all moistening all the earth with the milk. And in Kali Yuga, it's difficult to get good milk from the cows sometimes, the way they treat the cows. Even at the temple sometimes, yeah, it's hard to get some milk out of the cows. But anyway, they're doing okay. They'll be out soon, hopefully. They're going out. They get let out. At the time they're let out, they can go and eat all the new grass. And then they'll be given some more milk, hopefully. So so they'd have rules of combat as well. When they were on the battlefield, we understand that when the sun came up, that's when they would have the battle. There's four rules of diplomacy. Remember, you know, they don't just go to war over nothing. If an enemy comes to the kingdom, the king should offer him some kind words of welcome. That's the first rule of diplomacy. And then the second rule is if he still wants to fight or to take over the kingdom, he'll try to pacify him. it's pacification. Then the third one is called bribery. He'll offer him a kingdom, a little village or something. You know, take some opulence, take some treasury. And then if he doesn't do that on the fourth one, it means, okay, let's get on the battlefield and do the business. So this is when the sun would come up, then they would go to the battlefield, and then when the sun goes down, they would leave the battlefield. They would go to each other's camps at night as well and play cards, or you know, maybe drink things and have a social gathering. But then the next day, when the sun comes up, they go back out on the battlefield, and there was more honor back then. I heard that the last bit of honor we ever saw in this age was, I mean, there's a few, probably quite a lot of little stories someone could tell, but one of the main stories was in the Second World War. There was Hitler's close men like Himmler and Goring. Goring was in charge of the Air Force, and he was there are a lot of planes, a lot of German planes were being shot down at one point, and it was getting too much. Hitler was inquiring, what's going on? And Goring said, well, see, these British pilots, they're quite good. And they're shooting. He says, so how come they're shooting our planes down? And do any of them get shot down? And Goring said, yeah, well, they do eventually get shot down, but they eject. And then they go back, somehow over, they get back behind enemy lines, and they go back and fly back in and shoot us down again. So Hitler said, no. He said, as soon as you see them eject, he said, you go in and you shoot them down on a parachute. And Goring completely disagreed with him. He said, no, I'm not stepping in to do that. He said that once they're out that plane, they've got no protection, and I'm not with it on that. So that was quite he's putting his life on the line a bit there, but I think Hitler let him off the hook. So there was some there's some honor, like on the battlefield of Crewe, etc. They wouldn't fire on an enemy who was unarmed or devoid of chariot or asleep or afraid. Or not in control. They would give him a chance. It would be fair. I know it's different now in these times, because at one point, talking about the sun. Anyway, we're almost finished, aren't we? So just was going to say that a nice example Shiva Amraj was saying was because of these soldiers or warriors or kings, when they were there to protect the kingdom and go to battle, like in Kurukshetra, they would there was so much things going on the battlefield that if they weren't properly trained, it would have been very bad for them. Like in the First World War, they used to call it, if a soldier went to battle, he'd get like shell shock. But in the Second World War, they called it battle fatigue. But nowadays, they call it post-traumatic stress disorder when they've been in combat. I suppose if one is not in realized knowledge, that they could be on the battlefield and everything's speeded up, isn't it? Your karma's really speeded up on the battlefield. I remember listening to a lecture of Rinda Sarup. He said, you know, the battlefield is a speeded up place compared to what's going on in a normal life. Because it's like slowed down in normal life, but on the battlefield it's speeded up. Because at any moment, anyone can be next to you, can instantly show the true gruesome natures of this material world. Is that death can come at any moment. But in the Kurukshetra war, these warriors, they're born and bred. They are realized that they're eternal. So they don't have fear of death of the body because they know they're the spirit soul. And when there's so much things going on the battlefield. They said on the Battle of Kurukshetra, once there was, it's like rivers of blood, and with arms and heads and but to these warriors, it was like a palatial scene, like to an artist. He sees the sun rising. It wasn't a problem, and they don't get post-traumatic stress disorder back 5,000 years ago. But now we can see that, well, if one is protected by the Lord, he's not, and he surrenders to the Lord, Krishna takes away all his fear, because the only real fear for one who's self-realized or on the path of devotion is to be out of association of those of devotees of the Lord. I can, it's nearly half past, so we'll close down now. Has anyone got any questions or...